Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 19, starting at verse number 11 today, and finish our story about the Absalom coup. Now, I believe the Absalom coup probably took place right around 983 going into 982 BC, which I think was the 35th year of King David's kingdom, which would make him about 65 years of age. Well, Absalom, who was in his 30s, failed in his coup attempt, and he was killed by Commander Joab as Absalom hung from a tree. David didn't want him killed, and there will be consequences for Joab's action that come into light later. But he is dead, the coup is finished, the mini civil war is over, and it is now time for David to come back to his kingdom's headquarters and capital at Jerusalem. But evidently, some of the leaders, particularly in the tribe of Judah, who had been supporters of Absalom, are hesitant in getting David back on the throne where he belongs. So David decides to send them a message to get them on the ball. And that is found starting in verse 11 of chapter 19 of 2 Samuel. King David sent this message to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Now remember, those two priests, one of them probably in charge of the tabernacle, the other one in charge of the shrine of the Ark of the Covenant at Jerusalem. They had been left behind as kind of a message conduit between David in his exile and anybody that was in the kingdom at Jerusalem. So he sends this message to them because he knows that they can deliver it. Say to the elders of Judah, notice that, the tribe of Judah in particular, why should you be the last to bring the king back to his house when the word of all Israel has come to the king? You are my brothers. You are my bone and my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? So David feels that most of the Israeli tribes have decided that the Absalom thing was all a bad idea, and that they want David back. But Judah, for some reason, not on board just yet. Now, David reaches out specifically to one of his close relatives, a man by the name of Amasa, who was a cousin of Absalom. So say to Amasa, are you not bone and my bone and my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if you are not commander of my army from now on in place of Joab. Now, this tells you that David clearly is angry with Joab over his latest killing of a person that David felt was valuable enough to keep alive. And so he offers the job of commander of the armies to Amasa. So what does Amasa do? Verse 14. He swayed the heart of all the men of Judah as one man, so that they sent word to the king, return both you and all your servants. So the king came back to the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal, to meet the king and to bring the king over the Jordan. So down Judah goes with Amasa in the leadership to the western side of the Jordan River, east of Jericho, east of Gilgal. So we're talking about the original crossing site of the Israeli people when they first came into the Promised Land. I've been into this general vicinity because it's also the traditional site of the ministry of John the Immerser and the baptismal site, the immersion site of Jesus. And it's an interesting place to visit. The The river is very narrow now because so much water is being used out of the Jordan as it comes down the valley. But back at this time, back in the time of David, it would have had enough of a flow that you would want some assistance getting across it, especially if you had a lot of stuff with you. So David and his crew are coming from the eastern side of the river, and Amasa and his crew are going to help them get across. Now there's another guy that shows up at this time. Verse 16. Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite from Bahurim, hurried to come down with the men of Judah to meet King David. Now, you remember him? He's the guy a few weeks, maybe a few months earlier, when David was evacuating out of Jerusalem and heading through Benjamin and down into the Jordan Valley, where he's going to go across and head to his exile city of Mahanaim. This guy was throwing dirt, maybe some rocks, and hurling curses upon David and his men, calling him a man of blood, and saying basically that he's got what's coming to him happening by his own son having a coup against him and bringing the curses of God down on him. David's men wanted to execute this man because of his rude treatment of the king. But David wouldn't let them, because at that time, David suggested, maybe this is God's justice upon me for my life. Let's let him go and say what he wants and see what the Lord does with it. Well, this guy now shows up because he wants to apologize to the returning king for the treatment that he gave him. We'll get back to that in a moment. Verse 17, with him were 1,000 men from Benjamin, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, with his 15 sons and his 20 servants, rushed down to the Jordan before the king, and they crossed the ford to bring over the king's household and to do his pleasure. So this guy, Ziba, he's the one that I believe lied to David about Merib Baal, the adult son of the late Jonathan, David's best friend. When David was evacuated, or evacuating out of Jerusalem, Ziba showed up and gave him supplies. And when David asked, well, where's your master Merib Baal? And his response was, oh, he's not coming because he thinks this is the perfect time for him to take over the kingdom, that he's going to have the kingdom handed over to him. And so David was evidently angry enough by that story that he took away the properties of Merib Baal and gave them to Ziba. Well, I think Ziba is showing up here to get his face in front of David in a pleasurable way to combat the other side of the story that's about to be revealed. The story of what I think really happened with Merib Baal. And we'll get to that in just a moment. First, we've got to get back to this Shimei guy. Middle of verse number 18. Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan. And he said to the king, let not my lord hold me guilty, or remember how your servant did wrong on the day my lord the king left Jerusalem. Do not let the king take it to heart, for your servant knows that I have sinned. And therefore, behold, I've come to this day, the first of all the house of Joseph, to come out and to meet my lord the king. So he wants to make it clear, I am here to apologize. Notice that I am right here ahead of everybody else from my tribe to welcome you back as the true king of Israel. Now Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered, Shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed he who is his anointed? Now, he's the guy that wanted to chop off Shimei's head several weeks ago. But David said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be an adversary to me? Shall anyone be put to death in Israel this day? For do I not know that I am this day king over Israel? So David is angry with Shimei and Joab over the death of Absalom. And so he's holding that against them. And he's basically telling Abishai, why are you even opening your mouth to me? I know I'm the king. I don't need you to come in and kill somebody on my behalf. See, so it's a lot of intense emotion against his nephew, Abishai. And so, verse 23, the king said to Shimei, you shall not die. And the king gave him his oath. So he vows to Shimei, in the name of he who is, I will not execute you for your rude treatment of me several weeks back. And David will regret later that he made that oath. Verse 24. Now let's go to Meribbaal, who you'll see the name here in the text. It's Mephibosheth, but I've repeatedly told you that this is because of scribes later. They could not bring themselves to write the name Baal into the name of some historical person, because at the time the scribe was writing it or copying it, Baal was being worshipped as a god by many rebel Israelis. So they substituted names that usually had something to do with shame, Bosheth, rather than to pin out the name of Baal. But I think we need to stick with the circumcised name of these men. Remember, Baal in the time of David was being used as a Canaanite synonym for Adonai, which means Lord. So it represented the divine God, the divine name. So Meribbaal, the son of Saul, and it's actually grandson, came down to meet the king. He had neither taken care of his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came back in safety. So he's looking kind of messed up because he's been grieving the loss of David out of his life. He'd been rescued, basically, by David and honored and been treated like an honorary son. And then when David was gone, it broke his heart. So he didn't cut his hair. He didn't wash his clothes. He wasn't apparently trimming his nails on his feet in particular. And he needs good foot care because he's crippled because of an accident that happened when he was 5 years old during the evacuation of the capital of Gibeah at that time. After his grandfather Saul and his father Jonathan were killed in the Battle of Mount Gilboa. So this man is disheveled and has the appearance of one that's been grieving for weeks. Verse 25, when he came to Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, why did you not go with me, Meribbaal? See, that was the question he asked of Ziba. And Ziba said, well, he doesn't want to go with you because he thinks this is the perfect time to secure the Saul kingdom for himself. So David asks his side of the story now. And this is what he's told. Verse 26. He answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said to him, I will saddle a donkey for myself and that I may ride on it and go with the king, for your servant is lame. So basically, he says, Ziba tricked me. and he took off on the donkey I should have been riding, and then he slandered me. Verse 27, he has slandered your servant to my lord the king. So he lied to you when he said that I was trying to get the kingdom for myself. But, verse 27 continues, my lord the king is like the angel or the messenger of God. Do therefore what seems good to you. For all my father's house were but men doomed to death before my lord the king, but you set your servant among those who eat at your table. What further right have I than to cry to the king? So Meribaal is basically, I wanted to come. Ziba tricked me. But you know what? I don't care. You're back, which makes my heart joyous. You saved me. You saved others of my relatives. And I'm just happy that you're safe. And you do, David, whatever you think is appropriate in the decision of who you're going to believe, me or him, Ziba. So the king said to him, why speak any more of your affairs? I've decided you and Ziba shall divide the land. So David appears to not be altogether certain at this point which story he should believe. Now, I think he should believe Meribaal. I think that Ziba's story doesn't make any sense. Why would Meribaal think that he could take the kingdom for himself from Absalom, the son of David, that is basically trying to kill off his dad? That doesn't make any logical sense whatsoever. And the fact that Meribaal is clearly distressed and disheveled from his weeks of grieving over the loss of King David out of Jerusalem. Both of those things together, I think, is good testimony that his story is the correct one and Ziba is just a liar. But the text seems to indicate that David is uncertain, so he splits it right down the middle. He says, I'm going to let you have half of your family's property, and I'm going to leave the other half in Ziba's control. Now, how does Meribaal respond? Meribaal said to the king, oh, let him take it all, since my lord the king has come safely home. That's just more evidence to me that he is the gentleman in this story. Now, I don't believe that David gave it all to Ziba. I think David's original decision of splitting it right down the middle is what stood. But he was willing to give it all up just because David is now home. Verse 31. Now, Barzillai the Gileadite had come down from Rogelim, and he went on with the king to the Jordan to escort him over the Jordan. Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old. He had provided the king with food while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very wealthy man. So this man has been physically supporting David and his exiled staff and family members at Mahanaim during whatever time that this coup has gone on for. Well, he's come with David down to the Jordan crossing point to make sure that he gets safely back to Judea territory. So the king said to Barzillai, come over with me and I will provide for you with me in Jerusalem. So David offers him a nice retirement at Jerusalem, at the palace, because of his kindness. But Barzillai said to the king, how many years have I still to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old. Can I discern what is pleasant and what is not? Can your servant taste what he eats or what he drinks? Can I still listen to the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Your servant will go a little way over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king repay me with such a reward? So basically, he says, I'm an old man. I've lost my sense of taste. I've lost my ability to hear the difference in great music and in singing. All the sorts of things that go on in your palace as part of your enjoyable moments. I wouldn't be able to appreciate that. Verse number 37, please let your servant return that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. But here is your servant Kimham. Let him go over with my lord the king and do for him whatever seems good to you. So he says, I would rather, sir, just go right back home where I can die around my family and be buried immediately into the grave of my family. But if you really want to show some sort of thanks to me, then take this man right here. Take this man, Kimham, as my representative and treat him like you would have treated me. And the king answered, Kimham shall go over with me, and I will do for him whatever seems good to you, and all that you desire of me, I will do for you. And then all the people went over the Jordan, the king went over, and the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his own home. The king went on to Gilgal, and Kimham went with him, and all the people of Judah and also half the people of Israel brought the king on his way. So we've got across the Jordan. We're making that last bit of the journey that goes past Jericho and up the Jericho to Jerusalem road. More than likely, it's going to cut through Benjamite territory and then swerve over into the area around Bethany and then down into the Kidron Valley and into the oldest city of Jerusalem, the little place that's south of the modern-day Temple Mount. Verse 41, then all the men of Israel came to king and said to the king, why have our brothers, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king and his household over the Jordan and all David's men with him? So now we've got a fight going about, hey, how come we didn't get a chance to help bring him across the Jordan? That's not fair. And so all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is our close relative. Why then are you angry over this matter? Have we eaten at all at the king's expense, or has he given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah, we've 10 shares in the king, and David also we have more than you. Why then do you despise us? Were we not the first to speak of bringing back the king? And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. And this is absolutely ridiculous. But it is so human, isn't it? Both of these sides, the tribe of Judah and the other 11 tribes of United Israel, had joined in accepting Absalom as the next king. And they let David be run out of town and the potential that he would have been executed once he was caught. But now that Absalom's dead and they've decided that the best thing to do is bring David back as their king and just kind of pretend like nothing happened, they want to fight over which one of them came up with the idea first or which one of them has more of a share in the Davidic kingdom. And it just gives you a sense that not everyone's hearts are right with God in this kingdom. Now, we've only got a little bit of time left before we close up for today, and that's where we're going to introduce the next thing that happens, and I believe it happens immediately. Chapter number 20, now there happened to be a worthless man, a son of Belial, means he's not even worth the skin he's in, whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew the trumpet and said, we have no portion in David. We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel. So this Benjamite decides, you know what? I don't like the attitudes of the Judah people. And I don't really like the fact that, you know, Benjamin has lost the kingship. I'm starting a new rebellion, and I'm going to be the king. And David will have to deal with that next.